A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. So this is probably the only podcast series that's ever been produced about permanent markers. We're really going deep, and we're going all the way to the end of this topic because that is the My Word Prompts ethos. We don't just touch the periphery of many subjects. We go deep into different subjects. To set the stage for where we are up to now, we began this series talking about industrial paint markers and basically what those are. And I mentioned I was doing an inventory and trying to get all my stuff together for a move. And we looked at basically chemistry, because that's really, I mean, if you're interested, I guess, in material science and what the things we actually touch every day and might have all around us actually are. And this is basically the science of bondings and chemical structures and polymers, and that's really what's been actually very interesting. Whether you're also doing a lot of marking for an inventory system or a move, or you're just working on general adhesive projects, DIY, whatever, this stuff is actually quite useful to know, I must say. So I'm enjoying it. We covered in the last marker episode, I gave you guys a few challenges. Number one was Ziplocs, which we covered, hard marking surface. Good chance to learn about surface energy. And we also did laundry safe things. And today here I want to talk about marking fabric specifically. So I was out there yesterday doing the last few things, getting, I have a collection of backpacks, one for camera gear, one for the gym, one for general use, and I'm really trying desperately to get everything organized and, you know, in a nice system. So I decided, whatever, I'm gonna just write numbers on them. My trusty Sakura marker, which is a Sakura paint marker, and I've tried this before on different things like headset, you know, those kind of hard cases that you'll get for storing electronics in. Sometimes if you buy a pair of over-the-head headsets, you'll get one of them. Or those kind of lighter containers that you'll get if you buy non-over-the-head headphones. So I've discovered, there's a calligrapher, a budding calligrapher in me here. I'm there with my Sakuras and my Eddings and hunched over a table with a light and actually kind of digging this whole stuff. Like, it you know, you can do a nice job even if it just says Bluetooth headset. Anyway, I didn't get good results with the paint markers. They just didn't kind of get into the surface. And then I tried my Xylene marker, which was quite exciting, and I have to say, gave me flashbacks to my summers. I spent at least one summer working in my mother was in the picture framing industry. So that was our family business. And I was very curious to know what this formidable Xylene marker was. Then I saw that one of my markers was Xylene, opened the lid, and I said, oh my gosh, that's the industrial stuff. I remember that scent. So yeah, it's very, very strong, and I have to say that really bed down into plastics very well. That stuff's not coming off with ethanol or whatever. But, and here's the but, same for fabrics. It didn't really feel like the right chemistry for that. So Herman and Corin, what would you recommend? Let's talk today about fabric markings if you're trying to label backpacks or do a little bit of kind of calligraphy on different electronics you have tastefully. What would you be looking for in terms of a good chemistry? Does it depend on the specific fabric? Let's talk about markings that aren't going to come off in the wash for things that are going to be going through the washing machine. And maybe this will be the end, but it's been a fun detour through marker world. Herman and Corin, over to you.
I'm out on the balcony yesterday with a Sakura paint marker and three backpacks, trying to number them like a responsible adult who has his life together. Number one, number two, number three. 5 minutes of work. ermine. The ink flaked off before I finished writing the number 2.
Flaked off while you were still writing?
I'm drawing the bottom curve of the 2, and the top half is already peeling up like sunburned skin. The webbing on a nylon backpack strap. It's like trying to paint a garden hose with a dried-out whiteboard marker. The pigment just sits there on top of the fibers like a tiny, judgmental crust. One flex of the strap and it's confetti. I'm standing there on the balcony holding a backpack that says, one in two backpacks that say nothing, watching little blue flakes drift down onto the neighbor's patio furniture.
I'm guessing this is where the xylene marker enters the story.
Oh, it enters the story like a villain in Act 2. I unscrewed the cap, caught that smell, that sharp, almost sweet chemical punch that bypasses your nose and goes straight to your brainstem. And I was instantly 17 years old again in the back of a picture framing shop, getting gently high off industrial solvents while my mother pretended not to notice from the front counter. That marker bit into plastic like it was personally offended by the surface. On a hard headphone case, gorgeous, clean, crisp, looked like it had been laser etched. On nylon webbing, it bled into the fibers like a watercolor painting of regret. The lines feathered out maybe 2 millimeters on each side, this fuzzy halo of pigment migrating through the weave. But it looked permanent, you know? It looked like it meant business. One wash cycle later, I had a backpack that said, just a faint gray smear that looked like a ghost had tried to write something and given up halfway through.
This is the moment where most people discover that permanent on a marker label is basically a suggestion. Spring cleaning, moving season, everyone's labeling soft goods right now, gym bags, kids' camp clothes, storage bins with fabric handles, and roughly 90% of what people grab off the shelf fails within weeks.
I feel like there's a particular betrayal when it's kids' camp clothes, because you've already done the emotional labor of accepting that the clothes are going to come back destroyed. You've made peace with the grass stains and the mystery mud. You label them carefully. You send them off, and the one thing you thought you controlled, the name and the collar, is the first thing to vanish.
Then you get the phone call from the camp counselor. We have 14 identical green sweatshirts and no names in any of them. It's a small tragedy, but it's a real one.
Daniel sent us this one. He's in the middle of the same chaos, trying to organize a collection of backpacks, camera bags, electronics cases, and he ran into exactly this wall. Paint markers flaking, xylene markers bleeding, and a dawning realization that fabric is a completely different beast from the hard surfaces we've been talking about. The question is, what chemistry actually survives? Fabric, flexing, and a washing machine? And does it depend on the specific fabric?
This is where it gets genuinely interesting, because fabric is basically the worst substrate imaginable for a marker. It's flexible, it's porous, it's often hydrophobic, it gets abraded constantly during washing, and it swells when wet. Every single thing a marker binder wants to avoid. Think about what a marker is designed for. A smooth, stable surface where the solvent can evaporate evenly and leave behind a continuous film. Fabric is the opposite of that in every dimension.
It's the opposite of a nice, stable, non-porous surface. It's a hostile environment that also goes through a weekly torture cycle. It's like trying to paint a flag that's going to be waved in a hurricane.
And I want to dig into why the Sakura failed so spectacularly, why the xylene marker felt right but wasn't, and what the actual chemistry looks like for something that bonds to cotton or polyester and stays there through detergent and agitation. Because there are solutions. They're just not the ones people grab first. Let's start with the Sakura failure, because it's the most instructive. Paint markers. And this is true of Sakura, Edding, most of the acrylic-based ones. They're pigment particles suspended in an acrylic or epoxy resin carried by a solvent. On a hard surface like a headphone case, the solvent evaporates. The resin flows together into a continuous film, and you get adhesion because the surface is smooth and non-porous. The film just sits there, undisturbed.
Like a tiny plastic sticker you painted on.
Now put that same chemistry on nylon webbing. The resin film forms on top of the fibers instead of around them. There's no mechanical interlock because fabric isn't a flat plane. It's thousands of individual threads with air gaps between them. The moment you flex the fabric, that brittle acrylic film can't move with the fibers. Then it flakes. Imagine spreading a thin layer of dried Elmer's glue on a piece of woven rope and then bending the rope. The glue doesn't bend. It shatters into little pieces.
The paint marker's strength on plastic, that rigid continuous film, is exactly what makes it useless on fabric. It's too stiff to follow the surface. It's like the marker industry accidentally optimized for the wrong thing.
The xylene marker fails for the opposite reason. Xylene is an aromatic hydrocarbon solvent, incredibly aggressive. On polystyrene, or ABS plastic, it partially dissolves the surface, letting the pigment mix into the plastic itself. It's not adhesion, it's welding. You're creating a mixed layer of pigment and plastic at the surface. On polyester or nylon fabric, the xylene swells the fibers and the pigment slips into the gaps between polymer chains. But there's no cross-linking, no chemical bond forms. The pigment is just
a house guest who gets evicted the moment detergent shows up. And detergent is a very efficient eviction service.
Detergent surfactants are designed to lift hydrophobic particles off fabric. That's their entire evolutionary purpose. If your pigment isn't chemically bonded to the fiber, it's gone. And that's the third failure mode. Water-based markers just fade because the dye never bonds at all. So you've got three ways to fail: flaking, bleeding, and fading. The question is, what binder and solvent system can actually penetrate cotton or polyester fibers and then cross-link into something that survives mechanical agitation and hot surfactant water?
I'm guessing the answer isn't buy a different color, Sakura.
The answer involves some seriously elegant polymer chemistry. There's a whole category of markers that use what's called a waterborne polyurethane dispersion binder, PUD for short, combined with a blocked isocyanate crosslinker. And the trick, the clever part, is that the crosslinker is designed to activate at washing machine temperatures.
The thing that's trying to destroy your label is also the thing that finishes curing it. That's almost poetic.
40 to 60 degrees Celsius, typical hot wash. And the blocked isocyanate unblocks, reacts with the polyurethane, and forms a permanent, flexible film that's mechanically locked around individual fibers. It's not sitting on top like the Sakura, and it's not just visiting like the xylene. It's chemically cross-linked through and around the fiber structure. Imagine the difference between laying a net over a bush versus growing the bush through the net. The cross-linked PUD is the second one.
That's diabolical. You write on the fabric, it dries enough to handle, and then the first trip through the washing machine is actually the final curing step. The thing you're afraid of is the thing that makes it work. It's like a spy who needs to get captured to complete the mission.
That's what makes a marker fabric permanent. Not a stronger solvent, not a stickier resin. A binder system that forms covalent bonds after application, triggered by heat and moisture. Standard Sharpies, for comparison, use dye dissolved in alcohol or glycol ether. The dye just physically sits in the fiber, and surfactant water pulls it right out. No cross-linking, no permanence. It's the difference between putting a post-it note on a wall versus painting the wall and letting the paint cure.
When the prompt mentions writing numbers on backpacks and watching them vanish, that's not a quality control problem with one marker. That's the entire category being chemically incapable of the task.
And the Consumer Reports study from last year tested 14 fabric markers through 50 wash cycles on 100% cotton t-shirts and 65-35 poly-cotton blend backpacks. Only three markers kept more than 80% legibility after all 50 washes on both fabrics. Three out of 14.
Of course there are. There are always three.
The Sharpie fabric marker. And I want to be fair here, it uses a dye-based formula that actually does bond to cotton because cotton has hydroxyl groups that form hydroxyl groups that form hydrogen bonds with the dye. On cotton, it's decent. On polyester, it's fading noticeably by 10 washes because polyester is hydrophobic and crystalline. There's nothing for the dye to hydrogen bond with. It's like trying to stick a magnet to aluminum. The mechanism just isn't there.
It's a one-fabric pony. Great if your entire wardrobe is cotton t-shirts. Useless if you own anything made after 1970.
The Marvu Cheetah fabric marker is the one that dominated that Consumer Reports test. Pigment-based, uses the PUD binder with that heat-activated crosslinker I mentioned. Survived over 50 washes on cotton, over 30 on polyester, and the key is that the polyurethane film is flexible enough to move with the fabric. It doesn't crack like acrylic, it stretches and recovers with the weave.
The third option?
The Pilot Pintor. This is the fascinating one because it looks like a paint marker. It's opaque, it's got that paint marker feel, but it uses a urethane-based binder instead of acrylic. Standard paint markers like the Sakura use acrylic resin, which is rigid. The Pintor's urethane binder stays flexible after curing, which means it can handle fabric flexing. It's not quite as wash durable as the Marvion cotton, but on synthetic fabrics and coated surfaces like headphone cases, it's actually better. It's the specialist for the dry-use synthetic world.
Which explains why the Sakura worked on the hard headphone case, but failed on the backpack. The case was rigid. No flexing, no problem. The nylon webbing flexed twice, and the acrylic film shattered. It's the same marker, same chemistry. Completely different outcome, based entirely on whether the surface moves.
The xylene marker felt like it was working because xylene is a solvent that makes things happen. It swells polyester fibers, the pigment slips in, and it looks permanent. But there's no cross-linking mechanism. The pigment is trapped, not bonded. Detergent molecules are smaller than pigment particles and better at penetrating fiber gaps. They slide in, surround the pigment, and lift it out. One wash, maybe two, and your label is a ghost. It's the difference between locking your door and just closing it really firmly.
The entire marker aisle is a minefield. Acrylic paint markers flake. Xylene markers wash out. Dye-based markers fade on anything that isn't cotton. And the stuff that actually works is hiding in the fine print chemistry of binders and crosslinkers that nobody reads.
It's used in textile coatings, in furniture finishes, in the stuff that makes outdoor fabrics weatherproof. The marker industry just took a while to miniaturize it into a felt tip. That's where the fabric type really starts to matter, because cotton, polyester, and nylon are chemically completely different animals. Cotton is cellulose. Every glucose unit in that polymer chain has hydroxyl groups sticking out, ready to form hydrogen bonds with anything polar that comes near. Waterborne polyurethane binders love cotton. The PUD particles penetrate the fiber, the water evaporates, and those hydroxyl groups grab the urethane and hold on. It's like a room full of people all reaching out to shake hands at once.
Cotton is basically the friendly extrovert of fabrics. It wants to bond.
Polyester is the opposite. It's polyethylene terephthalate. Hydrophobic, crystalline, and chemically boring. There are no hydroxyl groups, no amines, nothing that wants to hydrogen bond. The only way a binder works on polyester is if it can penetrate the amorphous regions, the disordered gaps between crystalline zones, and physically lock in place. That's why the Marvi Uchida works on polyester, but not as well as on cotton. The PUD can get into those amorphous regions, but there's no chemical handshake, just mechanical interlock. It's like climbing a rock wall with no rope. You can do it, but you're relying entirely on friction.
That's what most backpack straps and webbing are made of.
Nylon is a polyamide. It actually has amide groups that can hydrogen bond, so in theory it should be friendlier than polyester. But nylon has a dirty secret. It swells in water, absorbs up to 4% of its weight. Every wash cycle, the fiber swells and shrinks, and that dimensional change stresses the ink film. Even a flexible polyurethane binder is getting mechanically worked thousands of times per cycle. It's a microscopic fatigue test happening inside your washing machine.
Nylon gives you just enough bonding to get your hopes up, then destroys the label through sheer repetitive motion. It's the fabric that says, "I like you," while slowly pulling your arm out of its socket.
It's the fabric equivalent of a handshake that turns into an arm wrestling match. And this is where the washing machine itself becomes part of the chemistry. People think of a wash cycle as just water and soap, but it's a brutal environment. Detergent surfactants are designed to strip hydrophobic particles off fabric. That's their entire job. Mechanical agitation flexes every fiber thousands of times. Hot water at 60 degrees can soften thermoplastic binders that seem perfectly cured at room temperature. It's a chemical, mechanical, and thermal assault happening simultaneously.
Which circles back to that blocked isocyanate crosslinker. The first hot wash isn't just not destroying the label, it's finishing the chemical reaction that makes it permanent. The assault is the cure.
The blocked isocyanate unblocks at 40 to 60 degrees, reacts with the polyurethane, and forms a cross-linked network that's chemically bonded to the fiber and mechanically locked around it. After that first cure, subsequent washes can't touch it, because the binder is no longer a thermoplastic that softens with heat. It's a thermoset. It won't remelt. It's like the difference between butter and a hard-boiled egg. Heat melts butter every time. You can reheat a hard-boiled egg all day, and it stays solid.
If someone's sitting at home right now with a backpack and a fabric marker, what's the actual workflow? Because I'm guessing scribble and hope, isn't it?
Step 1. Clean the fabric with isopropyl alcohol. Fabric softener residues, body oils, even the sizing treatments manufacturers put on new fabric, all of these create a barrier between the binder and the fiber. A quick wipe with isopropyl removes that layer. Think of it like sanding before you paint. You're giving the binder direct access to the substrate. Apply the marker in thin layers, waiting about 30 seconds between coats. You want the binder to penetrate the fiber, not pool on top. Thick application is how you get a film that cracks. Thin layers let each coat soak in before the next one builds on it. It's the difference between staining wood and glopping paint on top.
Yote. Setting.
This is the step most people skip, and it's the difference between a label that lasts 3 washes and 30. An iron on medium, no steam, 2 minutes. Put a piece of parchment paper between the iron and the marking so you don't transfer ink to your iron. Or if you're lazy like me, toss it in the dryer on high for 20 minutes. The heat activates the crosslinker. Then, and this is important, wait 24 hours before the first wash. Full cross-linking takes time, even after heat setting. The chemistry needs to finish its conversation.
The timeline is clean, mark, heat, wait a day, then wash. And that first wash actually finishes the cure if you're using a PUD-based marker. It's a 5-step process, but 3 of the steps are waiting.
Here's the payoff. There was a film crew, 12 identical black nylon backpacks, labeled with a Marvi Uchida fabric marker using exactly this workflow. 6 months of daily use, weekly washing. Every label remained legible. The control group used a standard Sharpie. Labels were gone after 3 washes.
3 washes versus 6 months. That's not a marginal improvement. That's a completely different product category. That's the difference between a label and a temporary suggestion.
Now for electronics cases, headphone cases, camera bags. These are often nylon or polyester with a polyurethane coating. The coating changes the game because it's semi-porous. A urethane-based paint marker like the Pilot Pentor can bond to that PU coating directly. In a head-to-head test on a PU-coated headphone case, the Pentor stayed adhered after 100 flex cycles. The Sakura paint marker flaked after 10.
The Xylene marker on that same surface?
Avoid it entirely on PU-coated cases. Xylene can partially dissolve the polyurethane coating. You'll get great adhesion in the short term because you're literally melting the marker into the coating, but you're also degrading the coating itself. Best case, you get a permanent mark on a ruined case. Worst case, the coating delaminates and takes your label with it. It's like using a flamethrower to light a candle. Effective, but the collateral damage is not worth it.
The decision tree is, if it's going through the wash, use a PUD-based fabric marker and heat set it. If it's a synthetic case that stays dry, a urethane paint marker works. If it's anything with a coating, keep xylene far away.
If it's 100% cotton, you can get away with a dye-based fabric marker like the Sharpie. But honestly, for the extra $3, just buy the Marvi and never think about it again. The mental overhead of remembering which marker works on which cotton item is not worth $3. So boiling it down to the decision tree,
washable fabric, get a PUD-based marker and heat set. Dry synthetic cases, urethane paint marker. Xylene stays in the garage.
The test is so simple, it's almost embarrassing that more people don't do it. Take a scrap of the actual fabric you're marking. A seam allowance, an inside flap, somewhere invisible, write on it, flex it 20 times, then run it through 1 wash cycle. If the ink survives that, the chemistry is right. If it doesn't, you saved yourself the frustration of relabeling everything in 3 weeks.
20 flexes and 1 wash. That's the entire quality control department. You don't need a lab coat. You need a scrap of fabric and the willingness to be wrong once instead of wrong 20 times.
It reveals something the packaging won't tell you. A marker that says permanent on the barrel might be permanent on paper, permanent on metal, permanent on glass, and completely useless on nylon webbing. The word permanent has no legal definition in the marker industry. It's marketing.
Like natural on food means whatever the company wants it to mean. Permanent means we're confident you won't return it.
If listeners take one thing from this entire conversation, beyond the chemistry, beyond the crosslinkers, it's that the right marker is a function of 3 variables: the fabric chemistry, whether it's going through the wash, and whether the surface is coated. Match those 3 and you're set. Ignore any one of them and you're relabeling.
For the specific use case from the prompt, backpacks, electronics cases, the occasional tasteful calligraphy on a headphone case, the Pilot Pintor covers the dry-use synthetic stuff with better opacity than fabric markers, and the Marvi Ujita handles anything that's going to see a washing machine. Those two cover about 90% of the soft goods labeling universe.
The remaining 10% is performance fabrics with fluoropolymer coatings. Gore-Tex, DWR, treated nylon, and those are a whole different problem. Those fluoropolymer coatings are designed to repel everything. Water, oil, dirt, and apparently also every binder chemistry the marker industry has ever developed. Gore-Tex has expanded PTFE with the surface energy so low that nothing wants to stick. DWR coatings are basically the same problem in a thinner layer. Right now, no consumer marker works reliably on either one. You could write on Gore-Tex with a marker and watch the ink bead up like water on a waxed car.
The backpack that's waterproof enough to survive a monsoon is also immune to being labeled. You can keep your gear dry, but you can't tell whose gear it is.
There are industrial surface treatments, plasma etching, corona treatment, that temporarily raise the surface energy enough for ink to bond, but nobody's selling a plasma wand at the craft store. It's an unsolved problem for consumers, and honestly, it might make a good follow-up if someone wants to send us their failed attempts.
The marker industry does seem to be inching toward a solution, though. I've been reading about UV-curable inks, the kind that cure instantly under a UV LED instead of needing heat setting.
Right, and the appeal is obvious. Instead of marking, ironing, and waiting 24 hours, you'd mark and then hit it with a little UV flashlight for 10 seconds. The chemistry uses photoinitiators that cross-link the binder when exposed to UV, no heat required. The problem is getting that chemistry into a marker form factor that's stable on the shelf. UV-curable resins tend to cure in the barrel if any ambient light leaks in. You'd open your marker drawer and find a perfectly cured brick.
We're a few years out from a consumer product. The shelf stability problem is non-trivial.
Probably 2 to 3. There are industrial UV-curable markers already, but they're expensive, they stink, and they require nitrogen-blanketed storage. Not exactly something you'd toss in a kitchen drawer. You'd need a special opaque marker body, maybe a cap with a UV-blocking additive, and even then, the shelf life would be measured in months, not years.
Which means for now, the PUD and heat workflow is still the best thing going for washable fabric. And for everything else, match the binder to the substrate and test on a scrap first. It's not as elegant as a UV wand, but it works.
If you've got a weird surface that's defeating every marker you own, some exotic fabric blend, a coated bag that nothing sticks to, a DWR-treated tint you need to label, send it our way. We'll test it, we'll ruin some fabric, and we'll report back. Ruining fabric in the name of science is basically our hobby at this point.
The address is in the show notes. We're curious what impossible surfaces are out there. If you found something that laughs at every marker in the aisle, we want to meet it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
During the early medieval period, dust storms originating in the Gobi Desert transported iron oxide particles over 2,000 kilometers to the Mongolian steppe, where they settled as a fine ochre pigment that nomadic artisans used to produce yellow and red dyes for textile decoration.
Of course, Mongolia shows up. It always comes back to Mongolia with Hilbert. 2,000 kilometers of wind transport, just to deliver pigment to people who had no idea where it came from. They just knew the dust turned into color.
This has been my weird prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. We'll be back next week with something completely different.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long-eared host. Until next time. time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.